Right, well, come with me, please, to Proverbs and chapter 6. And we'll read it as we go along. But it's the first 19 verses of chapter 6. We're doing our Bible studies in the book of Proverbs. And these are sort of, they're not introductory chapters, but they're setting the scene, as it were, and then we actually get into the Proverbs themselves. And if you remember, amongst many things, it's supremely about wisdom. God is all wise. He sees, he knows, he understands, and therefore to walk with the God of wisdom will mean that I will see as he sees, and know as he knows, and understand as he understands. I will be given that rarest of things in this world, discernment. Discernment. I'll see things as they really are. I'll be able to penetrate into what's really going on. I will be wise. As for example, in chapter 5, we see through those who seek to make sin look attractive. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil, but in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. We see things as they really are. But today, chapter 6, first 19 verses, and it begins with the words, "My son." So here's a young man, he's stepping out, the great adventure. He's on the king's highway, but there are dangers aplenty. And one of the things that as someone is young, stepping out, they need to realize that things are not always what they seem. But the wisdom of God's word will be a lamp to his feet and a light to his path, and indeed a lamp to our feet and a lamp to our path. So perhaps this evening, these first 90 verses, perhaps we can say, things are not always what they seem. Maybe that's a kind of uniting theme. So first, number one, is verses, chapter 6, verses 1 to 5. And maybe we could describe this, you could describe it in different ways, but maybe we could say, people who take advantage of you. My son, if you put up security for your neighbor, have given your pledge for a stranger, if you are snared in the words of your mouth, caught in the words of your mouth, then do this, my son, and save yourself. If you've come into the hand of your neighbor, go, hasten, and plead urgently with your neighbor. Give your eyes no sleep and your eyelids no slumber. Save yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. Someone comes to you, they're in seeming need, and they say, well, things should be okay, but if you could act as security for me. In other words, if things fall through and things don't work out, if you could cover my debts. Maybe they come to you and it's a business proposition. And they say, it's a great opportunity, it's fantastic, you know, we could make some real money here. But they're not going to lend me the money for me to exploit this opportunity unless you could be security for me, unless you could guarantee that if, you know, the debt falls through, that you'll pay. Could you help me? And the temptation is to say, if you're a young man stepping out, well, yeah, sure. Because I don't want to be seen as being mean, or unwilling, or unhelpful, or unfriendly. But, says Solomon, it's a bad idea. Because if they default, you pay. You've made an open-ended commitment. You've made yourself responsible for someone else's actions. You've committed yourself to a future over which you have no say and no control. And so they're not in your debt, because you're helping them. Actually, it's the other way around. You're in their debt, verse 3, for you've come into the hand of your neighbor. Because if they default, if they're the ones who run up the debt, you pay, and you could actually therefore lose everything. And it's subtle, isn't it? This is not quite exactly a thing, but when I was a student in my third year, we had next door neighbours, and one of the next door neighbours, he was a man, he was a middle-aged man, and he knew we were Christians. There were four of the students in this house. He would come round, ask to borrow money. Not quite the same thing, because it wasn't like a business proposition, and it wasn't sort of open-ended, but he asked to borrow money. And an older man coming round saying, "You're Christians," and he was very persuasive and very winning, And it can be hard in some situations, can't it? When you feel it's an unequal situation, it's hard to say no. It's hard to look like you're a mean Christian. You're unwilling. See if they're very winning. But, says the writer, you must say no. Now, we're not talking about being generous with our giving. We're not talking about giving gifts. And we're not talking about supporting people who are in real need. And we can help them. We can do all of those things. That's all good. It's talking about an open-ended commitment, where they have their hands on the levers, but it's with your money. And if they default, if they get it wrong, you're the one who has to cough up. And there's a sense in which you've been taken advantage of. You've been talked into something, you've been persuaded to do something which will bring ruin, potential ruin. You've been snared by your own words, by your willingness to help. So what should you do? So you say, well, a promise is a promise. I promised, and you know, I'm an honest person. I don't want people to think that I renege on promises. You know, my reputation is at stake. Well, says the writer, yeah, promise is a promise, but on this particular occasion, you shake yourself free of the promise. If you are snared, verse 2, in the words of your mouth, caught in the words of your mouth, then do this, my son. Do what? Save yourself. You've come into the hand of your neighbour. Go, hasten, and plead urgently with your neighbour. Give your eyes no sleep and your eyelids no slumber. Save yourself like a gazelle from the hand of a hunter. That's how serious it is. And like a bird from the hand of the fowler. What should you do? You make a thorough nuisance of yourself. You give your neighbour no rest. You badger your neighbour. You pester your neighbour. It means humbling yourself. It means having to make the effort. It means being unpopular and maybe breaking any sort of friendship or relationship which might have been there. But actually, only one thing matters. That's to save yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter. Because you could perish. You could lose everything. Like a bird from the hand of the fowler. Maybe a helpful way of thinking about it is that when someone's put in these unequal situations and we feel under pressure and someone comes to us and, well, think about your money. Whose money is it? Is it my money? Well, actually, it's the Lord's money, isn't it? The things that I possess are the Lord's. I don't say, I don't look at my money and say, well, that's mine. I say, it's His. I'm to be the steward of it. It doesn't belong to me. I'm a steward. And if I'm a steward, then I'm to use it in the way that brings Him pleasure, in the way that honours and pleases Him. And He's told me here, don't put yourself in a situation where you're using what belongs to me to put yourself in an open-ended commitment whereby you might lose everything. Well, maybe you're thinking about it. Well, is it such a big thing, all of this? Well, about 30 years ago, Lloyd's of London, where you have names and syndicates and it's unlimited liability. People know what I'm talking about? You know, you insure things that nobody else would insure. And because you're insuring things which are potentially high risk, the rewards can be very great. And that's why people have these syndicates and you become a Lloyd's name and so on. And that looks very good and you might get a regular big income from that because you're insuring things that nobody else will touch. You know, the rewards can be very great. Well, 30 or so years ago, a number of syndicates, a group of people, a group of names, companies, individuals, they ran up debts because they'd underwritten, they put up security for asbestos exposure and environmental pollution. And they hadn't calculated in just how much it would cost. But of course they gave a cast iron, we will underwrite it. They put up security. And because they miscalculated, and because there was misinformation and all the rest of it, when it actually started to come in and say, well, you're going to have to pay out, because the syndicates and the names in the syndicates, because it was unlimited liability, and they started to call in, you put up security for your neighbour, you now need to pay, people lost everything. They lost all their money, they lost their homes, they had to sell everything they possessed. So people who were really very wealthy, one day, The next day they actually possessed nothing at all. They lost everything they possessed, literally everything, because it's unlimited liability. And yeah, some of the things are tragedies where people actually bought presents, birthday presents. You know, a rich person, you know, a rich father buys his daughter at the birthday present, I'm making you a name at Lloyd's, and you know, it's paying out $10,000 a year for you. Isn't that great? You know, kind of coming in, and then the day dawns when actually it's unlimited, and actually you lose everything. And people realise that actually it wasn't quite, and they obviously had to redesign the whole thing, because Lloyd's is still with us. But you think of all the heartache that caused. People losing everything, all the tears, all the heartaches, all the sorrows, all the difficulties in relationships and everything. And you think, actually, if you just read five verses from Proverbs, it would never have happened. You would have thought, well, I'm not going to put up security for a neighbour and pledge for a stranger. I'm not going to do that. However great the calculations are, however big the income seems to be, I'm putting myself in a very dangerous place because I can't control the future, but I pledged my money to and on to that future. And it all goes pear-shaped. And so people lost everything. But just five verses of scripture saves you. So you can see the beauty of Proverbs, can't you? The wisdom. Because for many of us, we may think, well, I'm never in that situation. But if we take it to heart, it protects us from those situations that might arise. Because things aren't always what they seem. Okay, number two is another my son. This time it's verses 6 to 11. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Now, there's a Beatles song on Revolver. It's called I'm Only Sleeping. Quite like it. It's got a chorus. Please don't wake me. No, don't shake me. Leave me where I am. I'm only sleeping. Anyone ever think that? I think we all do, don't we? We all think, I remember having a Bob Dylan song, When You're Gonna Wake Up. I remember that coming into a dream. I was dreaming and the song came in, When You're Gonna Wake Up. So I woke up. But you know, I'm only sleeping. What's the big deal? That's fine, isn't it? Relaxing. Taking it easy. It's so innocent, isn't it? But again, things aren't always what they seem to be. Because if the first five verses of chapter 6, others can plunge you into disaster. Actually, we can plunge ourselves into disaster. Go to the ant, O sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in the summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? I'm only sleeping. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man. Sluggard is a great word, isn't it? Some words are nice to say. The word slumber is a nice word, because slumber, it feels like you're going to drift into a sleep, doesn't it? Slumber, but sluggard. Sluggard, I can't be bothered. I just can't be bothered. It's just too much trouble. It's too hard. Well, sometimes you're a sluggard, you say, well, I'll do it later. Now, I know there are all legitimate reasons for doing all those things. I understand that. But we all know we're on this page about sluggards. I'm only sleeping. And what's wrong with that? In Sri Lanka, in 2010, I think it was 7 or 8 of us went out from Amy Park Chapel. And we were there with young men from the German churches. And we had to put up some buildings. And I've got to say, Barbara, these young men from the German churches, their work rate was phenomenal. They were up at the crack of dawn. They worked, they worked, they worked. And lots got done very, very quickly. I wasn't involved. I was doing far more important things. I was preaching and teaching. But there was one German. I think it was called Tobias. And while they were working away, often in the heat, putting up buildings, doing all these things, Tobias would be taking life a bit easily. You know, enjoying the sunshine. He'd be putting his feet up. He'd be relaxing. And also, he be careful what I say here, but he had a very good sense of humour. So we did a lot of joshing and joking. And also we like to talk about the war. So because he was not quite so hard working, and you like joshing and quite like talking about the war, and the other Germans were working hard, we made him an honorary Englishman. So that was it. So anyway, so while they were working, he was not working quite so hard. He was resting and relaxing. So here's his son. Maybe the temptation is to, you know, take it easy, relax, and so on. So effectively his father says to him, look, while you're only sleeping, can you at least open one eye? And from your bed or from your hammock, can you see that trail of ants? Verse 6, go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Here's a little creature, a little tiny creature, a little ant that God has made wise. And it's a wisdom that, my son, you don't seem to have. Without having any chief or officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. So here's the ant. There's no one coercing the ant, no one scolding the ant, no one shouting orders at the ant, no one checking up on the ant to make sure the ant's doing what the ants should be doing, but they're busy. Up doing. Storing up their food in the summer months before the difficult months come. And again, thinking about Sri Lanka, there was one place I was staying, and there was a hole in the wall in the bathroom, and the ants were coming in through the hole, and there was a great trail of them going, and they went out through another hole. I could watch the ants for ages. They're so interesting, and they're going backwards and forwards with food. And at one point I rubbed out their trail to see what they would do, and for 24 hours they went round the side of the building out in the hot sun. But then 24 hours later they worked it out, and they come back inside through this hole, round the side. But if you watch them, while it was light, there'd just be a constant stream of ants. While they had to, they were busy. So in the dark, it went quiet, there were no ants. As soon as the dawn came up, the ants were at it, and they were at it the whole time. They'd been made wise, you see. And no one was telling them what to do, and yet they all seemed to know what to do. Okay, so he says, learn from the wisdom of the ant. Because if you don't get going, when the difficult days come, which they always will, sluggard, you will have nothing. A little ant that is wise. But you see how it puts it? There are little acts that show that you're foolish. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man. I'm only sleeping. There are only little things. But actually, you're robbing yourself. You're mugging and robbing yourself by your own actions. Poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man. So what's it saying again as this young man sets out on life? Some of those things just seem very little, don't they? Of little consequence. Just folding the hands, little sleep. I'm only sleeping. It's not much. Doesn't count very much. I'll get round to it later. But actually, little things like that can have very big consequences. And if you're not prepared to work, then you'll end up with nothing. And rightly so. And it's not just an Old Testament situation. It's a New Testament problem. Anyone know any New Testament letters that talk about this particularly? Anyone know? Yeah, that's right. Do you know where that's from? It's 2 Thessalonians. Yeah. So in 2 Thessalonians, there are people who are sponging off others. And Paul says, no. For even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. For we hear some among you walk in idleness. Not busy at work, but busy bodies. They're sluggards. So again, it's not something that's sort of kind of in the distance, you know, somebody sitting around doing nothing and needs a boot. It's a very real issue, isn't it? And little things have big consequences. You don't think they do, but they do. Okay, things aren't always as they seem. Okay, number 3. Things are not always what they seem. Verse 12, a worthless person, a wicked man, goes about with crooked speech. He winks with his eyes, signals with his feet, points with his finger. With perverted heart, devises evil, continually sowing discord. Therefore, calamity will come upon him suddenly. In a moment, he will be broken beyond healing. He's saying, before someone else sees you coming, make sure that you see them. Don't be naive. Recognize that some people are just very wicked. And they're looking for easy pickings. And they're looking to take advantage. Don't be naive. They're out to ruin others, to enrich themselves. They're unscrupulous. And they'll seek to conceal their real intentions. So don't look at their, don't listen to their words, because their words can often be smooth and winning and so on. Don't look at their words. Read their body language. Because that will at one point give them away. Something will show you in their body language that they're not what they seem to be. There's the crooked speech and the nod and the wink and the shuffle and the gestures. Maybe they've got confederates, maybe they've got people who are there to help them. But he says, with perverted heart devises evil. They've got wicked hearts. They're troublemakers. They're quite happy to sow and to divide and bring discord so they can achieve their purposes. Perverted heart devises evil, continually sowing discord. So see through it. Because God does. God sees through it. God penetrates what they're up to. And of course all their shenanigans will come back like a boomerang to smash them in the teeth. The boomerang of God's judgment. And those who choose that life will destroy themselves. But don't be taken in. Okay? Christians often are perceived as being innocent, naive, easy pickings. But we mustn't. The book of Proverbs is great for the horizontal. We see people as they really are. We read things as they really are. We're given discernment. And we of all people shouldn't be swept along. Slightly different, but a number of years ago, a man got in contact with me, and he had this extraordinary story, which kind of rang true. If I can put it like that. It pressed all the right Christian buttons. And he didn't mention money at that stage. So I met him on neutral territory. It's in a cafe. And I listened to his story. And as I say, it was very, very well constructed. And he obviously knew evangelicals. He obviously knew Bible people. He obviously knew what the way we think. I said something which I thought would... I didn't trust him. I didn't trust him because you just pick up sometimes, don't you? I think it's body language. There are things that people do and we're uneasy. There's something that's not right. So I thought, if I say this and it'll flush him out or not. Anyway, I kind of took him at his word, but took it further. And his response to say, if you say it again, I'll kill you. But we were in a cafe, so I said it quite out loud. Even louder. And then I said, so, and I repeated to me, and then he got up and went out. And then I met John Woolley. And the same guy had been to East Street with exactly the same story. And he walked around the block with someone in the church, and the person came back and said, yeah, no, I think this guy's genuine. And there are people, we mustn't be naive. And often it's body language that kind of gives it away. There's something. So what people say and what people mean, what's going on in their heart and what's coming out of their mouth aren't always the same things. And Proverbs protects us against those things. It was rather odd, actually, because the guy came back on a Wednesday evening to Amiens Park. He'd forgotten that we'd had that conversation. He came back about 7 years later. I said, I know you. he threatened to beat me up. But I think I had Zach with me and a few others, so it was fine. Okay. Things are not what they seem, but then some things are what they seem. Look at verses 16 to 19. There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and one who sows discord among brothers. There are things that God hates. And if he hates them in the world, well, he hates them much more in his family, doesn't he? In the church. So let's make sure, if he hates haughty eyes, let's make sure that we only look down on people if we're helping them up. Because God is the humble God. When Christ came into the world, he humbled himself. The cross, he took the lowest seat, because that was my seat. And he took the lowest seat so I could have a better seat. He went to the cross so I could have all the riches and treasures that he's won for me. So, no haughty looks in the church. We only look down, as I say, we're helping people up. And it's the spirit, isn't it? I go into a room, what's the lowest seat? I take the lowest seat so everyone else gets a better seat. And a lying tongue. Well, then we must be the people who are known for being honest and truthful. What about the hands? Hands that shed innocent blood. Well, let's get our hands wet and dirty washing people's feet. And a heart that devises wicked plans. So let's have hearts that devise good plans. You've heard me say this before. I remember when I was in Southampton, I came out one morning and my car was unusually clean. And I thought, it must have had a very heavy rainstorm in the night because it's just looking beautiful. And there was a friend of mine who came round at 2 in the morning and washed my car and made it look absolutely lovely. He devised something lovely. He didn't want to tell me. So he came round, did it in the darkness, in secret. I came out in the morning and my car was looking absolutely fantastic. Devising good plans. There's a sense, isn't there? Devising wicked plans. It's kind of, you're keeping it to yourself. Well, there's a kind of sense in which we can be secretly devising good, can't we? I suppose that's the point. And then he goes on, feet that make haste to run to evil. Well, let's have feet that are running to do good and running with the good news. How beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news. And then a false witness who breathes out lies. A false witness can tell you the truth, and it's a lie. Because the truth they tell you is 95% of the truth. So everything they've said is completely true. But by leaving out the 5%, actually, it's a lie. They've just spoken the truth, but actually, by leaving out the most significant part, it's turned into a lie. And as you know, in the church, God hates that. Think of Ananias and Sapphira. There's a sense in which they did tell the truth, but it wasn't the whole truth, and therefore it was a lying witness, wasn't it? They breathed out a lying witness, and God dealt with them because what they were doing was on holy ground. It was in His church, in His family. And as you know, we had to discipline, sadly, a person in a situation because they were bearing false witness and breathing out lies. And one who sows discord among us. So let's be the people who actually do the very opposite. We're working really hard at endeavouring to keep the unity of the Spirit. If that's what God hates, then in His family, in this church, let's be the people who do what God loves. And then final thing, just as we look at this, can we see Jesus? Well, those opening words, being taken advantage of. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Talks about Jesus. Jesus, on his part, did not entrust himself to them because he knew all people. He saw through people. He knew where the dangers were. He wouldn't want to put himself in someone else's debt in that sense. And when it came to Thomas Sligo, obviously he was a diligent carpenter. And a worthless person, a wicked man, perverted heart. He saw through Judas, didn't he? He knew what Judas was doing. He knew that the one who was looking after the money was putting his hand in the money box and taking the money. He saw through Judas. I think that's why he was so long on the mountain that night praying, when he has to choose the 12. Because one of them he's got to choose is Judas. And when John 6, all the disciples go away and just a handful are left, the one who doesn't walk away is Judas. He's still there. But Jesus saw through him. But just looking again at chapter 6 and verse, the opening verses. My son, if you have put up security for your neighbour, have given your pledge for a stranger. Well, Jesus is there as well, isn't he? Because if you think about it, we were the debtors. And he made an open-ended commitment. He made himself responsible for our debts completely. And think what that cost him. He went to the cross. He paid our debts in his blood. Does that make him then a fool? Well, 1 Corinthians 1, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe, for the foolishness of God is wiser than men.